Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is time to get back into the Judds. Not actually into them, but to talk about them. And as I mentioned in the last episode, Ashley decided that she was going to be a politician. And I wrote about it in March of 2013. In a little over 2 months, Ashley Judd is going to announce that she is running for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. This is a woman who hates paparazzi, who hates reporters, and does everything she can to avoid them. She's not a huge fan of meeting with her fans, so I'm really clueless as to why she would want to run for U.S. Senate. Publicity? Big ego stroke? Realizes acting careers in the toilet? Jealous because Winona is on Dancing with the Stars? Ashley is going to have her life gone through with a comb, and if she thinks she can hide the stuff that she has done, or that reporters would not be able to find it, she's going to be surprised. I will be surprised if she makes it through the summer without quitting. Less than a month later, as I predicted, Mitch McConnell was ready for Ashley. And basically, Mitch McConnell's staff was caught on tape mocking Ashley's views on God during a February strategy session. And it took place during a Know Your Enemy meeting in which Team McConnell discussed the ammo they'd have against Ashley Judd in case she ran for Mitch McConnell's seat. And you can hear Mitch McConnell's voice in parts of the recording. And at one point, someone played a recording of Ashley Judd describing her religious beliefs. I still choose the God of my understanding as the God of my childhood. I have to expand my God concept from time to time. And, you know, particularly, I enjoy native faith practices and have a very nature-based God concept. I'd like to think I'm like St. Francis in that way, brother donkey, sister bird. And you can hear one of McConnell's staffers laughing, saying, brother donkey, sister bird. And another staffer said the people at Southeast Christian Church would take to the streets with pitchforks. They also talked about Ashley's mental health history. And one staffer told Mitch McConnell, she's clearly, this sounds extreme, but she is emotionally unbalanced. I mean, it's been documented. The campaign can go in chapter and verse from her autobiography about, you know, she suffered some suicidal tendencies. She was hospitalized for 42 days when she had a mental breakdown in the 90s. Then she was also described as anti-sort of traditional American family. And you can hear the tape. McConnell's team, they weren't threatened at all by Ashley. And they thought of her run as a joke. And then, of course, Ashley withdrew. She decided, oh, you know, I'm not going to be running for office after all. Now, speaking of the time, the 42 days that she had a mental breakdown where she was hospitalized, in her book, if she talks about, most of the book takes place at Shades of Hope, which was the treatment facility in Buffalo Gap, Texas, which is the place that everybody, all the Judds go to. It's where Winona went later. It's where Winona's perverted husband went. Everybody went to this treatment facility. But in the book, Ashley doesn't even talk about her career, like acting at all. You won't really understand how she got from Kentucky to Hollywood. It was basically about recovery from depression and growing up in a wildly dysfunctional family and then building on that recovery to become like a global activist. And the book is called All That Is Bitter and Sweet. Ashley uses a lot of words in it. She had a ghostwriter, but she uses a lot of words. And a lot of word salad. And she does talk about her truly awful childhood. She makes Naomi seem like a monster. I mean, really, very much so. And Ashley, you know, talks about how she had to spend her childhood being shuttled between mom and dad, who were both, quote, weirdly unconcerned about her overhearing their active sex life through thin walls. She attended 13 schools between the ages of 5 and 18. She said, I was bounced around from town to town, household to household, from Los Angeles to Kentucky to North Carolina and back again, while mom roamed, developing her lofty dreams. She said that the only reason that she's alive is because of the time that she spent in the summer with her grandparents, Michael Simonella's parents. many chapters, she talks about Shades of Hope, the recovery center. And there was one reviewer who said, you know, she really should cut down on the words. Because most people would say, I took a nap. And Ashley said, my nap had the dual purpose of essential rest and psychological relief. If you want to hear about Dario, he's not in there. I mean, a little bit. She talks more about her pets. There's even though I guess it's deeply personal because she's talking about her recovery and her depression and things like that, it's not the things that people were going to go and want to buy the book. You know, we want to know about the marriage and why it went to hell. We want to know, you know, how you became an actress, how all that happened. And none of that's in there. But shortly after she and her husband split, he got into an accident on the track, suffered two broken vertebrae, a fractured right ankle, and a concussion. Basically, his car went airborne into the protective fencing at the Houston Grand Prix. And Ashley, of course, went straight to Twitter. I have only clothes on my back and the dogs, but that's all that we need, and we are on our way. And sources said something good has already come out of this terrible accident. It's brought Dario and Ashley closer together again and on the path to patching things up. They still love each other very much. And Ashley was very distraught when she heard about his crash. She had tears in her eyes, immediately began praying to God he would pull through. Can you imagine somebody running for the U.S. Senate against somebody like Mitch McConnell, who was going to be king of dirty tricks against her? And I mentioned when I wrote about it that she didn't like paparazzi, she didn't like reporters, she didn't like her fans. So it's not really shocking that in March of 2015, during the NCAA tournament, March Madness, she was very excited about Kentucky, and they were playing Arkansas. And it was a really rough game. And she wrote on Twitter, I think Arkansas is playing dirty. Well, of course, you know, if you're going to tweet that out during the NCAA tournament, people are going to go after you. They're going to say horrible things about you. Is it right that they're saying horrible things about you? No. But what do you think that they were going to say if you were running for Senate? Do you think that they would keep it at a nice level political discourse? No. And Ashley said, you know, if I were in a more calmed state of mind, I would have phrased it differently. I might have said, I am really disappointed what seems like ultra-aggressive play. Well, people went after her, right? They liked Arkansas. They were just like, oh, you know, I hate Kentucky. And she said, the amount of gender violence that I experienced is absolutely extraordinary. A significant part of my day-to-day will be spent filing police reports at home about gender violence that's directed at me on social media. I 100% believe her that she probably spent a significant part of her day filing police reports at home about people on Twitter going after her. That's why why would she ever even think about running for political office? I can just see her. And obviously, no, you shouldn't be saying those things about people on Twitter, but that's how social media works. And she's like, I'm going to spend the day filing police reports. I can't imagine her, like, running for some kind of office. October 6th, 2015. It's a big day. This is something that Ashley Judd said. It is a very lengthy blind item that turned into reality, yeah, a couple of years later. And it was in Variety. It was the Power of Women issue. And Ashley Judd shared a story that she had never said publicly before. And it was about when she was filming Paramount's Kiss the Girls in the late 90s. She said, I was sexually harassed by one of our industry's most famous, admired, / reviled bosses. I was making Kiss the Girls at the time. And here I was, a declared feminist. I had completed a minor in what was then called women's studies, which we now call gender studies. And yet I did not recognize at the time what was happening to me. It took years before I could evaluate that incident and realize that there was something incredibly wrong and illegal about it. And I think that that's what's happening in Hollywood with regard to female crew members, above the line and below the line talent and pay disparity. We're individually and collectively coming to a realization and acceptance that this is an entrenched part of the reality. And I think that talking about it is essential to the process of becoming aware, accepting that this is reality, and then ultimately taking action. In my example, there was no casting involved. This was just twirling the lasso. I think it's very important to note that I considered myself empowered. He was very stealth and expert about it. He groomed me, which is a technical term. Oh, come meet me at the hotel for something to eat. Fine, I show up. Oh, he's actually in his room. I'm like, are you kidding me? I just worked all night. I'm just going to order cereal. It went on in these stages. It was so disgusting. He physically lured me by saying, oh, help me pick out what I'm going to wear. There was a lot that happened between the point of entry and the bargaining. There was this whole process of bargaining. Come do this, come do this, come do this. And I would say, no, no, no. I have a feeling if this is online and people have the opportunity to post comments, a lot of the people will say, why didn't you leave the room? Which is victim blaming. When I kept saying no to everything, there was a huge asymmetry of power and control in that room. This will be familiar to all the women to whom this has happened. I have a feeling we are a legion. I was with a bunch of other actors, and it was critical that it was actors. The exact same thing had happened to them by the exact same mogul. Only when we were sitting around talking about it did we realize our experiences were identical. There was a mutual strengthening and fortification of our resolve. One of the things that comes to mind for me, there was a really big feature that was done on this person in a national magazine, and there were all these allegations that they controlled the interview and had people listening in. And I thought, if someone had come and talked to me, I don't care. I will absolutely share that experience. Part of the strategy that keeps girls and women constrained in their professional experiences is retaliation and ridicule. The ultimate thing when I was weaseling out of everything else was, will you watch me take a shower? And all the other women sitting around this table with me said, oh my God, that's what he said to me too. In that moment, I told him something like, when I win an Academy Award in one of your movies. He said, no, when you get nominated. I said, no, no, when I win an Academy Award. That was a small moment of power when I was able to contradict him and hold to my reality. And then I got out of there. And by the way, I've never been offered a movie by that studio, ever. I beat myself up for a while. This is another part of the process. We internalize the shame. It really belongs to the person who is the aggressor. And so later, when I was able to see what happened, I thought, oh God, that's wrong. That's sexual harassment. That's illegal. I was really hard on myself because I didn't get out of it by saying, okay, mother effer, I'm calling the police. That's what I should have done because I'm smart. That also contributed to my journey of coming forward because I felt bad about myself initially for the way I maintained my safety and got out of the room. When in fact, what I did was exceedingly clever and brilliant and self-preserving. That's another element of how we internalize those attitudes, and talking to other people is so crucial, is being able to take action. A few years later, I attended a gathering for the literati in New York at the premiere of Double Jeopardy. I was getting ready to say something out loud across the crowded table to him. He looked at me and tried to shut it down. I was no longer that naive ingenue who couldn't identify what was happening as it was happening. I was getting ready to nail him on it, and he said, I think I'll let you out of that deal we made. He knew I would come into my power. This happened to be a man who did this to a woman, but this system is one that all of us participate. I feel like I could have easily had a breakthrough conversation about what happened with men as I could with those women. We're all part of the problem, but we're all part of the solution. This is one of those incidents where any work I needed to do on it was completed when I confronted him. Healing comes in a lot of different ways. Some things require intensive, contained work. Some things could be resolved with a good run or punching bag or interaction with the perpetrator, in which one is able to take one's power back. Almost exactly to the day, 2 years later, she named Harvey Weinstein as the person that she'd been referring to in Variety. And she did so in that New York Times article. But that was her story. And it's a great story. And she was the first to come out. But go back to 2015 when she doesn't actually name the name. Why? She was already blacklisted, according to her. You know, she and Rose McGowan, others were blacklisted because Harvey wouldn't let anybody work. Peter Jackson said that because he had wanted to cast Ashley in Lord of the Rings, and he wasn't able to because Harvey wouldn't let him. So she's already blacklisted. So she could have said something. I'm not blaming her for not saying something, but this is what led this to go on for another couple of years. And it didn't really change who Ashley was. She was still the person that you really didn't want to work with. And in June of 2017, she's filming Berlin Station. And it was, you know, it was on Epics, espionage thriller. And Ashley was proving to be a nightmare to work with. Quote, everyone was thrilled when she signed on. And a massive storyline was built around her character. But from the moment she arrived on location, she's been causing chaos. She's constantly late, talks back to producers, and has been complaining nonstop. Apparently, she did not like her accommodations. They rented her a gorgeous apartment, but she demanded an upgrade. She's also unhappy with her trailer. It's reached the point of doing urgent rewrites to downplay her role. Her attitude is threatening to derail the whole show, and if there's a third season, you can bet she won't be back. Now, this is before the New York Times article came out. But it's very, I mean, that's just Ashley Judd. As I said, when she was thinking about running for Senate, and that was, what, 4 years earlier. For whatever reason, she just is not into the part where you have to be nice, or the part where you have to interact with fans, or the part where you have to do inane interviews with journalists and reporters from across the country and deal with the same questions over and over. She just didn't like that. And then producers are like, oh, she doesn't like to do that. We'll find somebody else. And she's already being blacklisted in so many different ways. She was just making it worse. Now, also, about 6 weeks before the New York Times article came out, Ashley went on, I think it was Facebook Live, to call out a TSA agent. And she was right. She didn't like being called sweetheart. She said, this is the kind of thing to me that happens, which I categorize as everyday sexism. And she's saying this on a live. And by the way, on this live, I know that she had said, oh, I have perfect skin and all this stuff. You could tell she's had so many fillers and Botox in this thing. She couldn't make any expressions with her face. But that's beside the point. And it's so easy to let it go and to not speak up, particularly when it's so easy for someone to push back and say, oh, I was just being polite. So I was coming through security and a guy said, hey, sweetheart. And I said, I'm not your sweetheart. I am your client. So I was already setting a boundary. Now, she didn't talk about which airport it happened at or anything like that. She said, when I was setting my things out, he said, hey, nice dress. I didn't hear him say anything about the attire of any of the other folks in the entire line. And I'm in one of the most traveled airports in the world. I'm surrounded by lots and lots of other people dressed in lots of different kinds of dress. And then guess what happened next? He touched me. I didn't see him touch anybody else. And I turned around and I said, that was unnecessary. And, you know, by that time, you know, my skin was burning, my feet are burning. It's so hard to continue to set these boundaries when someone continues to push. And then for good measure, he just said one more time, have a good day, sweetheart. So Ashley went and spoke to the manager. And she said it ended positively. I'm very happy to report that the manager, with which I spoke immediately, apologized. He had a very long conversation with the employee, and he also assured me that their training is to call people sir and madam, and that touching someone is totally inappropriate. I also spoke with the manager about how our dream, our ideal, would be that we would record this little Facebook Live post together, but because he was in uniform, he wasn't able to do that. I think it's really important, if we're discussing the problem, also to highlight a solution. Should she have been touched? No. You know, and being offended at being called sweetheart, I got it. And to go on Facebook Live and just kind of rant about it, and I want the supervisor to be on the Facebook Live and stuff, it seems, I know she wants to call it out. It's just very, when she's aggrieved, she calls things out. She didn't say anything about the whole Berlin Station thing and all of the stuff and the people talking about her. She didn't ever choose to respond to that. And in April of 2018, she sued Harvey. She filed a lawsuit that claimed that Harvey tried to destroy her career because she would not give in to his sexual advances. And Ashley gave an interview to ABC News, said, hey, you know, he stopped me from getting work. I lost career opportunity. I lost money. I lost status and prestige and power in my career as a direct result of having been sexually harassed and rebuffing the sexual harassment. My career opportunities, after having been defamed by Harvey, were significantly diminished. My career was damaged because I rebuffed Mr. Weinstein's sexual advances. I know it for a fact. And it talks about Peter Jackson and what he had said about the blacklisting. Because Peter Jackson had said that Harvey stopped him from hiring female actresses, including Judd. And he said he did not know at the time why Harvey opposed hiring her. And Ashley did say she would donate any money gained from the lawsuit to the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, which would have been a disaster. Because that organization skimmed every last dollar. But her lawsuit got tossed. At least as the part of the sexual harassing. And basically, the judge ruled that Ashley couldn't claim sexual harassment because she didn't actually have a professional relationship with Harvey at the time. He wasn't her employer. You know, she was seeking employment, I guess. That's probably the meeting in the hotel room. She was allowed to proceed with her defamation and retaliation. And, you know, basically she had tried a couple of different ways with amending the complaint to make it so the sexual harassment thing would work. And California had amended the sexual harassment law to explicitly include directors and producers, but the judge wouldn't let her apply it retroactively, so she was kind of screwed on that. But, I mean, she tried. She did try. And basically Weinstein then said, hey, we're going to have to put this whole thing on hold because I'm going to have to plead the Fifth Amendment if there's a deposition or something because of all my criminal cases. So we really didn't hear much from Ashley. I mean, she did like Olympus Has Fallen. And my understanding about Olympus Has Fallen is that it was supposed to be a bigger role. She wasn't supposed to die in the first 5 minutes of that movie. I'm sorry. I should have said spoiler. But it happens in the first 5 minutes, so what's the spoiler? But anyway, she decided to become kind of Angelina Jolie light and did some stuff with the UN and was going all over the world. She didn't really focus so much on trafficking. She focused more on animals and things like that. And in February of 2021, and there are photos of it after the fact, but I'm going to make a point here in a second. But she had this catastrophic fall, which she said nearly cost her a leg. And it was while she was doing conservation work in a Congo rainforest. She said, like, there was this 55 hours. I think that's the title that she wanted for her movie. And she did it on an Instagram Live. And she was in South Africa in her bed, in her hospital bed. And she said that she had tripped over a fallen tree in the dark while working to track an endangered species of great apes, broke her leg in four places, and left her with nerve damage. And she said, it left her at the very edge of my edge and included being hand-carried, ferried via motorcycle at points, during which time she bit down a stick, howling like a wild animal, while losing and regaining consciousness and repeating a Bible passage, Psalm 23. But she said, I was able to access medical care. And a Congolese person probably wouldn't have been able to, and they would have lost their leg and potentially their life. She said, the difference between a Congolese person and me is disaster insurance that allowed me 55 hours after my accident to get to an operating table in South Africa. And then she started saying, the apes matter. But what's funny is, I guess it was October of 2022, is after her mom committed suicide. But she broke a leg again. A different one. It wasn't the same leg. And she said it happened when she was being clumsy. So in my head, I'm thinking, does she have a drinking problem? Is she falling down drunk? I don't know. It's just something that popped in my head. Both times, just tripped. It's clumsy. You know, the first time she's in the forest, and there are pictures, like I said, of her being carried, like in this kind of makeshift blanket kind of thing. But she looked conscious. And the other thing, this is the other thing. There are pictures of it. Oh, could somebody get a picture of me in this contraption, you know, while you guys are carrying me? It just seems like an odd thing. Where she's biting on a stick, howling like a wild animal, while losing and regaining consciousness and repeating a Bible passage. Oh, and can you take my picture, please? Several. Because I'm going to talk about this, and I'd like some pictures to accompany it. I don't know. That just kind of it's just weird that there's pictures of it while she's... I get that the pictures. It's just the fact that she has said that she was basically clinging to life, and yet there's pictures. Well, for now, let us transition from Ashley. She will make a return appearance because she is the one who discovered her mother's body. She is the one who complained about the police interrogating her and asking her questions about the circumstances related to her mother's death. But we will get to that after we talk about Winona. And Winona is Winona. I guess it's Winona, really. I just like, I don't know. I like Winona, but it is Winona. But going back, and again, I'm gonna mostly focus on the time of the blog and stuff, but there are things that we need to discuss that happened before I started writing the blog. And one of those is her horrible taste in men, or men that don't really work out well. And back in December of 1996, she and her then husband, Arch Kelly III, were sued. There was an $800,000 complaint filed in Tennessee. A former employee of Winona and her husband accused Winona and Kelly of sexual harassment and discrimination that allegedly occurred while she worked for them as a farmhand. Basically, among the charges, this woman alleged that Winona asked her to come to her bedroom and massage her butt, and that Kelly attempted to measure her butt with a tape measure. I do not know what happened to this lawsuit. My guess is that there was some money paid, and it all went away. But whatever led to it, then the next thing you know, Winona and her husband decide they're going to get a divorce. That was in 1999. And there was this clause that prohibited them from discussing the divorce with reporters. And she also paid him like a lump sum of $250,000. Well, a few days later, Arch was quoted in the Tennessean, a newspaper, and he said he was going to be active in raising his children following his divorce from Winona. Well, he was later charged with violating his divorce agreement, which prohibits talking to reporters. And all he said was he was going to be active in raising the kids. Then, like a month later, a private investigator hired by Winona took pictures of Arch Kelly in the hospital, attempting to prove his nose job was elective surgery and not necessary. But the camera was confiscated, security removed the private investigator, and then Arch called the police again when another private investigator cruised by his house. But instead of like arresting Winona, the police served him with an outstanding arrest warrant after he had assaulted the private investigator back in July of that year. Winona and Arch Kelly obviously kept close. They have kids together. But they're always seemingly up to really shady things. And I think underneath the surface of everything with Winona, there's always these shady things, shady people. And I think I mentioned in the first episode that she never did get to meet her biological father. The biological father she did not know was her biological father until she was the age of 30. But Charles Jordan died in August of 2000. And they had never met. So after this contentious divorce with Arch Kelly, with the PIs and all this kind of stuff, I mean, happening through the end of 1999 into 2000, all of a sudden, in August of 2001, Winona announced her engagement to D.R. Roach, her former bodyguard. And get this part. He had been the bodyguard for 10 years. So during the entirety of her marriage to Arch Kelly, he was her bodyguard. And then as soon as Arch Kelly's out of the picture, all of a sudden, they're going to get married. And if you go back in time, and this is later we're going to find out how wrong this was, but everybody seemed to like D.R. Roach. Like, he would be at the concerts and stuff and joking with fans and everything, and everybody always enjoyed their interactions with him. Not so much Winona or mom or whatever, but everybody liked hanging out with D.R. But I do think that she and DR had this ongoing kind of thing while she was married to Arch. That's just me. But this divorce process with Arch took a long time. And like years. And Winona had to pay Arch, like I said, the $250,000. But he wasn't going to have to pay any child support, even though Winona had the children, because he didn't have a job. But, okay, I get it. I just, you know, they had been separated for so long, and they get divorced, and he still doesn't have a job. And in November of 2003, Winona got arrested for DUI. And this was in Nashville. And the arrest report stated that she had an odor of alcohol about her, watery eyes, dilated pupils, and she didn't remember how many drinks she had. She consented to a breath test, registered a blood alcohol level of 0.17, which is twice the legal limit, more than twice the legal limit. And the officer said he stopped the vehicle because it was traveling 47 in a 30. She did not seem very apologetic. Kind of. She said that she had been celebrating her impending wedding and a friend's birthday and clearly let my excitement get the best of me. I know there's never a situation where drinking and driving is acceptable, and I take full responsibility for my error in judgment. I think she could have left off the part about celebrating her impending wedding and a friend's birthday and just talked about the fact where she's taking full responsibility. But she did get married. She got married like 5 days after the DUI. She gets married to D.R. Roach. And they got married in a private ceremony. And although you will see reports, especially early ones from right after, that Winona's mother and sister were there, they were not. So, you know, but like I said, sometimes you'll see reports that they were. And think about how this up and down kind of relationship with Naomi for sure, and also Ashley, and how, you know, Winona had been Ashley's maid of honor, and, you know, a few years later, nothing. No, don't come. Don't come at all. One of the things that was always on the tabloids with Winona was her weight gain. And this was a bad thing. And, you know, oh, look, the covers were filled with gains 50 pounds, loses 50 pounds. Not just her, but other celebrities too, male and female, but primarily directed towards women. And she talked a little bit about her food addiction in November of 2005. She said it helped her deal with the death of a father she never knew. And she said in her book, Coming Home to Myself, that she was ready to confront what she felt was an addiction to food. She said, we can be in denial. I didn't have a lot of mirrors around my house. I just kept, you know, getting clothes that were bigger. I'm as addicted to it as someone trying to come off a drug. And she said food was her comfort when she was younger and on the road with her mom. My mom's in the next room, so I couldn't party. Couldn't go out, you know, on a date. So I stayed in my room, and room service came to me. It healed me through that lonely time. So I maybe didn't understand that food was that, you know, destructive. I think it was more of a soothing thing. And she said, you know, dealing with her mom all the time was difficult, that they fought bitterly over just about everything. And, you know, had this falling out. And she said, you know, turn to food to comfort. Those were some of the best years of my life. I just didn't know it back then. And when it was gone, I was like, well, what am I going to do now? So she did the solo album and stuff. But she said, hey, as I got more famous, I got more lonely. I got more depressed. I kept gaining weight. You come in from a really long day, you want a casserole. You don't want a salad. Now we spend our days longing for the foods we had growing up. Like the other day, I made a fried bologna sandwich and I thought, okay, I'm still 10 years old. There is nothing wrong with a fried bologna sandwich. Fried bologna, egg and cheese. There's this place that I used to go to. It was across the street from where I was working. And they just, that was kind of their specialty. And I never got tired of them. And then one day the owner died of a heart attack. And I said to myself, perhaps I should not be eating these because he made the point of having several a day. Anyway, Winona said, look, I realized I was having this crisis when I took my kids to a movie premiere. And my doctor called while I'm taking them to this premiere and told me that I should be hospitalized because my cholesterol level was so high. She said that was a wake-up call, and yes, that was the first moment, that aha moment, when the light bulb goes off and you realize, okay, maybe I need to do something about this. And so she scheduled gastric bypass surgery, but then decided, I don't want to do that. And she said, look, surgery would have brought me to a healthier weight, but she said, honestly, I'm excited about all that I'm learning right now, and I wouldn't have had that chance to get in there and figure all that out. I'm figuring it out. And she also said, talking about figuring out how to have better relationships with her sister and her mom, and that they were concerned about her. And so this is what she was talking about. And this was, like I said, end of November 2005. She's talking about in this new book. But in January 2006, she went to food rehab. She went to Shades of Hope, the same place that Ashley went, the same place that her soon-to-be ex-husband went. So she went, checked in, 6 weeks of therapy for a food addiction. Now I'm going to give you a date. And the date is February 18th, 2007. And that is what Winona said was her official separation date from D.R. Roach. But she said that after the fact. And on February 21st, he went to rehab. Where did he go? Shades of Hope Rehab Center, Buffalo Gap, Texas. But apparently, later on, like I said, she says February 18th. This is going to be proved incorrect. On February 21st, he goes in for rehab. Not food addiction, but actual rehab. And he's in there on March 27th, 2007. And he was arrested and charged with 3 counts of aggravated sexual battery on a child under the age of 13. And Winona, in a post on her website that day, said she filed for divorce from him, citing irreconcilable differences, and named the charges against him. She said, I'm obviously devastated. Our family will pull together, begin the healing process, and hopefully by the grace of God become stronger. We will move forward with our faith, family, and our friends to find resolution to this difficult situation. That doesn't seem like a very... I would have probably apologized to the child under the age of 13. Yeah, just, okay. And a spokesperson from this jail said the warrant was issued in Tennessee and that he was being held on $750,000 bond. Winona also said that he had been seeking treatment for drug and alcohol addiction at this rehab center since February 21st. And, okay, it just, there's a lot of things that are very different because the previous year, in an interview with Ladies Home Journal, which is kind of going to blow your mind with the coincidence on this thing, in an interview with Ladies Home Journal, she revealed that she was considering having more children with him. She said, what the heck, I'm going to see if I can, crazier things have happened. My daughter, Grace, the one we talked about yesterday, the one who's in the news, says, I'd like to have a black sister or brother. She's around my singers and most of them are black. And I said, be quiet and do your homework, but I do think I may adopt. And that she kept her marriage on track with counseling. We do workshops and couples counseling. We've learned how to confront one another to say how we feel. We don't blame and shame. You claim what it is you're upset about and you set it free. Okay. So we have all that happening in March of 2007. And like I said, in previously in 2006, she had given this interview to Ladies Home Journal. We're going to fast forward to August of 2007. And she's on the cover of Ladies Home Journal. And on the cover, she's wearing her wedding ring. And she said she still wears her wedding ring, though she's going through a divorce. She says, it's hard to just detach overnight. I'm healing in my own time. Don't you think that if your husband was being accused of and had been arrested, that possibly you would have taken that ring off right away? This is 5 months later. And she's still wearing it. I didn't really understand that at all. So you would think that with the charges leveled against him, that this guy would be looking at a lot of time in jail. Let me tell you what I wrote on October 31st, 2008. In one of the most shocking verdicts I've ever seen, Winona Judd's ex-husband was sentenced to 90 days in jail after he pleaded guilty to two felony counts of attempted sexual battery against a minor. The minor in question was 13 years old and Dan Roach was 51. All he got was 90 damn days, that's it? And this was in Tennessee. I thought Tennessee would be a state that would frown on that kind of behavior, but I guess not. Yes, he got 10 years of probation, and if he violates it, he will do the whole 10 years. But 90 days? People spend more time in jail for bouncing a couple of checks. So for all the 13-year-old girl went through, all the dreams she's going to have for the rest of her life, she can be comforted by the fact that this sex pervert got 90 days in jail for ruining her life. How in the hell does this happen? I'm also pissed at Winona. She says that she was shocked that her husband would ever do such a thing. I hope she would be. But I don't know where the hell her outrage is. It wasn't evident last year when she was interviewed and said she still wears her wedding ring and was having a tough time letting go. To me, that says she's an idiot and that she has some severe problems she needs to address. What if they had kids? Would she still be having trouble letting go if he had done the same thing to their daughter? There are very few people I dislike more than Ashley Judd, but I bet she had no problems calling this ass exactly what he is. 90 days? If judges are elected in Tennessee, someone needs to vote this judge off the bench. That is going to be it for this one. I will talk to you guys later.